Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau, and we got to get right into it. I want to say thank you to everybody out there listening. As always, this is our 50th episode, and it's been about a year since we started this show. I remember we started it in April of 2021, and I never thought we'd get to 50. You know, I got to be honest, I didn't know how well received this show would be, but it's been everything I've asked for and wanted and way, way, way more. So I want you to enjoy this episode. We thought about, let's do a biography. We've got so many biographies to do. This is a weekly show, but I felt like this week, I wanted to share an interview I did recently. I polled everyone on Twitter about this, and a lot of people were excited and wanted to hear the individual story that we're going to have on today. I did an interview with a person called Frank Fiordalino. Frank was a associate in the Bonanno crime family. He grew up in Queens and really was around the mob since his inception. He was born in Sicily. He came over at a very young age, and his uncles, his cousins, even his own brothers were involved in a mafia, and he came up under the tutelage of his uncle, Frank Cheech Navarro, who was a Bonanno capo. His cousin was Santo Giordano, who played a very big role in some really famous hits in Bonanno history. He would ultimately become a member of the Cafe Giannini crew and operate under a capo called Vito Grimaldi in the Bonanno family. He had and told me about his run-ins with people like Nicky Santora, Joey Messino, Jackie DeRoss, and other mobsters. It was a fascinating interview. And as I said on Twitter, I urge you to go into this with an open mind. I sure had to. This is the first individual I've ever interviewed that was a mob informant. And I've said before, and I'll say it again, I don't necessarily agree with these individuals' decisions to do what they do. But I have to realize that I'm not facing the same decisions they are. And they have to make the decision that they feel like is best for them. Do I agree with it? No. But my job is, I think, an investigative podcaster. And I'm going to make everyone accountable. And I'm going to have people tell their stories. And we have to realize on this show, this is a mob history channel and podcast. And our goal is to include all facets of that community, whether it was mobsters, whether it was mobsters that became informants, whether that was police officers, whether that was authors. We're going to talk to all of them and we're going to let them tell their stories. That's not to say we won't make people, as I said, be held accountable. And I thought we did that well. Frank came across to me as very contrite. He's living under a new name. He has a life. And he ultimately left that assumed name and is now living his life as anew. So I hope you enjoy the video. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at The Sit Down 7. Check us out on YouTube as well. You can find it by just searching The Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast. Thank you as always for being here. We couldn't do this show without you. Here's to 100 and then 200 and then 500 and more. Thanks for listening to The Sit Down. Here's my interview with Frank Fiordalino. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a mob interview. We're going to talk with an individual that I've gotten to know over the last week or two. And I've got to admit, I'm a bit fascinated by his story. He's the first person we'll speak to that was regularly around members of America's mafias throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I'm sure we'll get into his story. We're going to talk to Bonanno crime family associate, Frank Fiordalino. Frank, what's happening? How you doing?
Hey, what's up, bud? What's going on? What's going on, Jeff?
Good
what the introduction.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So, Frank, I got to know you through Tom LaVecchia. I got to know your story. I find you to be contrite in what you say. Obviously, there's an epidemic right now of different proportions on YouTube. It involves people that some of which don't want to tell the truth, some people that do tell the truth, some people that are hard to be believed. But I always found you to be contrite. I wanted to get you on and talk to you. Look, I'll admit, I've never talked to an informant on my show. I don't have any bad blood with them. I have no issue with anybody. I try to hear the story and I don't dislike or like anybody. I have to admit, I like you a little bit. You seem like a nice guy and you seem pretty.
Well, thank you.
Sorry for your crimes. I'll admit right out of the gate, Frank, when I saw you, I said, there's no way this guy's Italian. Frank does not look Italian at all, but he's about as Italian as it gets.
Yeah, I'm Sicilian.
Yes. You're from Castellammare del Golfo, right?
That is correct.
Tell me about your childhood, Frank. You were born in Sicily, right?
I was born in Sicily. My memories of Sicily at that age were zero because I came in when I was two. And I've said this before. We lived in Bushwick, Brooklyn for about 7 years, and then Ridgewood. We moved to Ridgewood when the neighborhood started everything started burning down. You know, down south they call it white flight, whatever. I don't mean to sound, but the neighborhood was changing.
Right, and we've seen areas of Brooklyn like Bushwick, you know,
yeah.
Brownsville, East New York, all those places become more, you know, different, you know, black neighborhoods or whatever. Either or, but Bushwick in, you know, the 70s, for instance, that's where, you know, Joe and Mary, that's where Galanti got whacked.
That would be 79, August of 79. That's that famous Carmine Galante hit. That's Bushwick. But at the neighborhood, at that time, the neighborhood was deteriorating. And, you know, we had the blackouts of 77, the looting in the Bed-Stuy border and Bushwick. And a lot of people got scared and moved out. And then the neighborhood turned prominently Puerto Rican after that within the 80s.
So growing up, you come here as a young child, you know, obviously you settle in kind of an Italian area, as we know. I mean, New York is littered with Italian areas in that time. There's a mob presence everywhere. Your family is very connected in the mob though, right? As far as uncles, cousins, pretty much everybody you knew. Did you know anything about, when you started to grow up, did you know anything about that? Did you realize that your family were different as far as, I guess not in your grand scheme of things, in your neighborhood,
yes,
normal, but you know, you didn't have a normal family, I guess you could say.
Normal, I mean, there was food on the table. My dad provided, my mom, you know, she was a house mom, and all the things. We had a respect for moral law, you know what I mean? But we definitely didn't trust authorities. I always say that because my parents came from a time where they come from a country at the time growing up that was right wing, the fascists and all that. So we didn't trust authority, and that carried over to the United States as well.
So your uncle was a made guy in the Bonanno crime family.
I had two uncles that were made in the and a couple of cousins, and I still do in the Bonanno family. My uncle John in the 60s, then my uncle Cheech in the 70s, and I had a cousin Tony Giordano who was allegedly involved in the Galante murder.
He was a driver, right?
He was the driver, correct.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Tony was a very unique individual. He's one of the, I mean, if you want to give a bio about somebody who was very interesting, and his life turned around kind of like Michael Corleone in a sense. In the 70s, over a parking spot dispute, he was punched in the eye by some guy named Mike the Boxer in Bushwick. And he owned a mechanic shop, my cousin did. And Mike the boxer one day was going home and he got killed. And it was always alleged that Tony had went from this guy who knew how to build planes, motors, kind of nerdy, to this really, really mad individual, you know, very smart.
If I'm correct in history, he died in a plane crash, right?
He died in 84. In a plane crash. He was 40 years old.
He was the first time
he had gotten paralyzed. I'm sorry?
Wasn't it the first time he had flown or something?
No. He flew already. He built that plane.
He was a big into like pilot stuff.
Aviation, sky. He used to sky pilot and all that stuff. Really, really intellectual individual. Like I said, if he doesn't get into the mob, that punch in the eye changed his life forever. Right. Mind you, his family was connected to his dad, his uncles, and everything like that. My grandmother was a Giordano, so in that side, on my dad's side, so he was also connected, but he could have went another way as well.
Yeah, it seems like that.
Well, he gets paralyzed in that three captain hit.
Yep.
I don't know if you are familiar with that, when the three captains, the Bonannos. It was documented, and then in the movie, the Donnie Brasco movie, whatever, which is half of it's full of shit. But back to Tony, he got paralyzed and he got shot accidentally by God. I could say who it was now because he's not around no more. Nikki Santora. Mm-hmm. If you remember, he was at he accidentally shot him.
Yeah, and, friendly fire, right?
It was friendly fire. I mean, you don't get shot by accident in one of those things. You get 10 bullets. You either live or you get one shot. Well, they sent him to this doctor at the time at our house. He used to do that stuff in our neighborhood. His name was Dr. Solano. He's dead now. He was around the Knickerbocker area. They tried to take the bullet out. He said, I can't do nothing about this. This is really bad. This ain't the regular bullet on your leg and shit like that. And he went to the hospital. Cops came there. He said, yeah, I just got shot. Friendly, I don't know where. Real stand-up. And years later, after he died, I was talking to Nikki about it. Me and Nikki used to hang out a lot. Me and Nikki Santora. He goes, yeah, I couldn't take that back. You know, he would talk in a roundabout way about it, but he would talk about it. He would even talk about Tony's mom going to the house. And my Aunt Maria, that his mom, she was American. And what made her unique was that even though she was American, she didn't like Italian Americans. She didn't trust them. And she would, you know, they would be like, stop now. You know, and Nikki would talk about that all the time. She had red hair. It was kind of funny. And Nikki said, yeah, he felt bad. But Tony being the guy, he understood the life. That's what happened. He got depressed after that. You know, people weren't coming to the house anymore, seeing him, his friends. You know, there was a guy I was around later, Vito Grimaldi. Tony's sister went up to him and said, hey, you know, why don't you come see my brothers, you guys? You know, he's pretty depressed. You know, he doesn't see you guys no more. And he kind of died of a broken heart, you know?
Yeah, that's a shame.
I know people might say, I don't feel bad for him. He was involved in a triple homicide. But,
right.
You know, there's...
Well, he had feelings, too, and he obviously was in a bad place. And look, ultimately, the way he died was very, very tragic, obviously. So your family, you know, there's obviously a lot of connection there. And you're part of... You're part of the wing of the family that, if we know anything about the Bonanno family, there was a large Sicilian faction, right? There were many people that came up, and we'll talk about one or two of those as we go on. But you obviously have that in your blood. When do you start kind of moving around in those circles? Because I'm sure like any, you know, mother and father or family, they tried to say, you know, go do something else. Did they ever say
that? I mean, me more than others. My brothers, they came here young, and there was a lot of the translation was lost on them. It was a little bit difficult. So they had a little bit of a rough start with the language. Mm-hmm. So I did not have that. I was lucky. My parents put me through. My mom especially wanted the best education. I went to Catholic school. I went to Catholic high school. But at the same time, you know, I fell into them inner circles where they want to go. It wasn't an academic issue. It was just a delinquent issue. And that's more or less the more I was staying away from, you know, the school scene and all that, I was running into like the more of the hoodlum scene. And most of the kids that I grew up with in Ridgewood later on, like in my 12, 13, in my teen years, they were also in the similar situation. Dads were connected. Uncles were connected. Cousins. They came from Bushwick. They moved over. And we started just... thinking like our family members.
You didn't want to miss anything either, right? I mean, you don't want to leave the corner. It's better to be outside than in school. And that was what you knew. You knew it best. And that's why I never knock someone that goes into that life, because that's what they're trained to do, basically. It's hard to get away from the streets, especially when you see people you're very close with. They're making money. They seem happy. Why wouldn't I want to do that? That's why I don't fault any of these people that do what they do. I can't say because I didn't grow up like that, but I can understand.
Right.
Do you start getting into these circles. Who are your core people? Did they, you know, you mentioned people that you would become friends with. Did they become lifelong friends and you both went into the life, as you call it?
I guess when my uncle, Frank Navarro, who's my mother's brother, starts realizing that I really don't want school, he starts putting me in places that, that he feels comfortable for me being at, and my brothers as well. My other brother really wasn't. I have a middle brother that was like, you know what? I really don't need the bullshit. I'll do my own kind of thing. And my older brother and I were always around my uncle a lot. And he, for example, he ran a baccarat game. He put me at the door, and I worked at the door. Not in that order. I think I was serving coffee. Yeah, I actually was serving coffee first, and then working at the door later on, as I got older. And my brother was lending out money at the game, so that's what he was doing. That was one of his charges. It's not like I'm saying anything out of that people didn't know. And that's little by little we got involved with that. I wanted more. At one point, I was hanging out with individuals that wanted more. And that's, you know, the farm team kind of thing comes along. You know what I mean?
And when we talk about farm teams, obviously throughout the 80s, there were many of them. You know, the Bath Avenue crew, the Cafe Giannini, Tanglewood Boys, you know, New Springville, all these different groups are popping up. For anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, they were basically young hoods, let's call them, that were doing things on the street for these families, or there's Lucchese's, Bonanno's, Gambino's, whatever. So you're moving around in Ridgewood. Obviously, the big crew over there, you got Cafe Giannini, Baldo's running Cafe Giannini, Baldo Amato. He's got.
Well, he's not running. He has a relative of his running
right.
It.
But his family.
You know whose place it was, correct? Basically, we're all around a certain individual. Like, for example, there's some kids that are around Patsy Conti, the Sicilian faction, the kids I grew up with. And then there's other kids that were around the Nicky Carrazzo, one kid was. And there was Vito that was around Patsy Catalano. And then there was me that was around my uncle. And then later on, Vito Grimaldi. So those were we were looking to get into that life. So what kind of like becomes the turning point is the killing of one of our own. One kid gets killed. The kid we hung out with, Ralphie Shula, who was around Bobby Glasses a lot. He was kind of like, he was an earner. He was an earner at a young age. He was about in his 20s, and he was starting to make money, but he didn't really respect alliances, and he was starting to get a little too big-headed for argument's sake. He started wanting to do he started wanting to do his own things, disrespecting. And the thing with him was his father, his family was not really in the mob. And the only connection really that he had was the only person he would be kissing ass to. And that was Bobby at the time. And he was starting to ruffle a lot of feathers at one time. And I remember, you know, as a kid, when you want to make that step for your first killing or anybody, and you ask anybody from Sammy to anybody, it's always going to be you want a statement, and you want somebody to kill to say that now you're able, or you're this and that. And Ralphie was one of the first statement killings that came out of the Giannini crew. And he died. They found him in his trunk. They pumped some in him. And it was a jealousy issue, but it was a thing that was stewing over 6 months. It was always tit for tat. Vito hated him. Vito ended up killing him. And after that, other guys were doing other things to establish themselves with their people and even within their friends.
And when you say Vito, you're talking about Vito Guzza, right?
Vito Guzza, that's correct.
Right.
Yeah,
so Vito is, you know, there was a lot written about Vito. He's doing a long stretch right now. He is your basically the glorified. Would you say leader of the group? Let's say.
No.
Okay.
No, the group had cliques. I said this before. He was the most influential, and then very influential. You know, if he said something that ruffled everybody's feathers, everybody was on pins and needles. I would say Paul was for a while until we got older, and he had his own little clique too. That would be Paul Ragusa. Then it shifted to like me and my friends. We had our own guys, you know?
So it's interesting. You all kind of reported to someone different. That's kind of interesting. I actually didn't know that.
We all kind of reported to nobody, really. We reported,
but you had
we tried
like your,
that.
You had like your skipper kind of in a way. Right?
Yeah. We did. And as we got older and, you know, guys started going to jail. It's like for example, I started with my uncle. I didn't have that before. I couldn't. It was like walking on eggshells. I couldn't tell him to do anything. He had his money. He had a lot of it, too. He wasn't going to let me do fucking zero. Mm-hmm. OK, I could have starved to death if it was up to my uncle in the criminal aspect. You know, there was people online before me. He just it's hard to explain. It's just who it was. It just makes me aggravated even thinking about it. Back to him. But when I got older and these guys ended up getting locked up when I was 25 or 26, the majority of the Giannini crew, the 96 indictment, and I started going around Vito Grimaldi. And I kind of I kind of left my uncle in a sense. According to my uncle, it was okay. And Vito said, you know, you mind if I use it? And my uncle told him, use them for whatever the fuck you want to use them for. You know, we just didn't see eye to eye. Once the money got, he called me a terrorist. He thought I was fucking too wild. And I started hanging out with him. And he actually taught me Cosa. Vito Grimaldi did. He took his time. He knew what he was dealing with. He gave me breaks. He knew when you know, things wasn't all right. He let me know. And he kind of like guided me towards that.
What kind of things was he teaching you?
He was old fashioned. I mean, I hear stories of I'll give you an example. Sammy talking about Tato. Same thing. Watch the hands. Last thing you're going to do. Use your hands if it's the last, you know, if somebody touches you, that's different, that kind of stuff. Talk about the old stories, you know, moral law, what's not moral, who's not going to tell me what to do. Very, very, very kind of biblical in a lot of ways.
He ran a bakery, right?
Yeah. He has one of the best bakeries in New York City, actually. One of the most popular ones. Good stuff, you know, I haven't been in New York in a while. Probably ain't gonna pass by there by no means. Right, if you know what I mean.
Let me ask you when it comes to this, right? So you're coming up in the game, you're learning stuff. What kind of things are you doing in the streets? You talked about games and baccarat, card games and stuff. What kind of things were you doing?
Well, I'll get back to you. So, like my uncle, he would, if he needed me to go break fucking windows, burn a car or something like that, that would be fine. But if he needed me to go fucking have a couple of machines somewhere, make money and earn, never happened. You know, that's just the way he was. He just, you know, he was an opportunist. And it was different with Vito. He gave me an opportunity. But I was in a frame of mind of, you know, like of being a money guy. You know what I mean? But I was able to do anything. And to be back to Vito, to be fair to him, he didn't need no strong arms either. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He wasn't that guy. He is, but not. I've never heard him talk about doing any work or anything like that.
So you're telling me basically that your uncle, Frank, he wouldn't let you deal with any money related things. He was only
really
interesting. Now, let me ask you, I'm always fascinated by, so a young kid like yourself.
He was very critical. He was very, very, very fast to his opinion. Oh, I'll tell you, I have an older brother. My older brother would come into a place and he would talk about me for about 20 minutes. My brother would leave and then he'd do the same thing about my brother for 20 minutes. And he would just do that shit all the fucking time. It became old after a while, exhausting.
Interesting. So let me ask you something. So
typical zip move.
Right. You're doing all this stuff. What kind of money are you making, right, with this kind of thing?
I wasn't an earner. I tell everybody that. I was fucking, I got to the point where I would do anything to do whatever I had to do. I didn't do drugs, okay? I think I tried cocaine for the first time when I was 29. That was because I was hanging out with a couple of strippers. And I didn't even know because I drank, you know what I mean? Okay, that's yeah. But I smoked weed maybe 5 times in my life. You know, so I was a drinker though, and I still drink now and then. But I wasn't, it's just, I don't know. I was in a mindset. See, everybody died in everybody was dying at a young age. Everybody died in my family young. I knew that death was a part of life, but I also was aware at a very young age it didn't have to be naturally. You know, my brother died when I was 7. And I'm not trying to have no fucking kumbaya moment right now. I've been to mob funerals at least, by the time I was 12, at least 5, 6. You know, I don't know if it was about a babysitter issue or it just was a respect issue, you know? Yeah, get your ass over there. That's so-and-so, you know? So I figured once I got into it deep, you know, what the fuck? Either I'm going to get killed, everybody else does, or end up in jail, and I did.
So you had basically accepted by the time that you had gotten into, you know, doing associate type of things that, you know, you had two ways out. It was you were going to die or you were going to go to jail. You were okay with that. You had kind of realized.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt.
Okay.
Without a fucking doubt. It was just where I was. And even I tell everyone I was in jail, I was fine. Jail was okay. It wasn't bad. I think the lack of respect from a lot of people out there, I don't want to say who, but some family members, I'll put it that way, couldn't even come up with $5,000 for my lawyer after I extended all my lawyer fees, after they would ask me to do 100 fucking things. And they know who they are. It's not even worth fucking going into. But, I mean, I'm talking about multimillionaires, by the way.
Right. They were
stingy. And well, that wasn't it. Everybody has a fucking reason. At the end of the day.
Hold on. I don't want you to tell me yet why you did what you did. I want to get to a point.
Well, that's the whole thing. Everybody, at the time, is probably 80% of it. After you know, you weigh it in, you're like, all right, well, fuck it. You know, I get deported, and I do 27 years. I'll still be in jail talking to you. Wow. And then I get deported.
Right. So, you know, it was a lose-lose situation for you.
Yeah. And the whole thing, too, was, I mean, the guys I was testifying against, it was all about gambling.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't bring no heavy shit to that murder. Like, you know, if it was for my testimony or my information, I don't think they would even been indicted.
Interesting.
So, I gave it structure and I gave it whatever. So it was like, okay, let's go for it. Right. I said this before, I would definitely have a problem with somebody sitting in jail still because of me.
So you're saying basically none of the people that you involved in your testimony, they would have been out by now. They went to jail for other crimes that they.
Well, yeah, they went to jail for murders. Joe Messina, 8 murders. I had nothing to do with them testimonies. Baldo, 2 testimonies. No, 2 bodies. I had no knowledge of those bodies at all. You know,
you just added to some of the crux of the indictment.
Right, the racketeering indictment. Yeah, I added to it. Yeah, but what I added to those 3, I'm not rationalizing. I say this all the time. A rat's a rat's a rat. Okay, let's just get that out of the way. But If like, for example, in my murder I was involved in, nobody got arrested. Well, they did, but they ended up cooperating. One guy wore a wire. The other, you know, it's just they put him to work. But nobody's doing life or anything like that. The only people, it was Baller doing life. Yeah, because he had 2 murders and his friends and the family put him away. Richie Cannarella, Frank Lino, not Robert. Robert took his held his mud, but yeah.
So the issue you're talking about is you would ultimately in the early 90s be involved in taking someone's life, correct?
I was.
Can you tell me about that?
I don't really like to talk about that. I kind of like leave that out of it. I will eventually when the time comes. Like I said, this is probably the last interview I'm going to give for a while. I got other things coming. I find you interested in my stuff. That's why I'm on it. If I don't like somebody, I'm not going to give an interview.
You're not going to do it. Okay.
No, not at all. 100%.
So let's just say this. An individual died. That came out in court. We know about that.
It was.
Are you told to do that? How does that happen?
What do you mean? How did I get caught?
No, like, why did you do it?
It was a convenience. It was part money, 90% wanting to do it because I wanted that. You know, it's part of that enhancing myself to the
right. You're trying to elevate yourself. I got
of course. I want people to know that I'm able. You know, I had no problem shooting people. So, I mean, or even stabbing. So I didn't have a problem with that. I had a problem with putting a gun into somebody who went to work every day. You know, but somebody who is, that could have been me. You know, it was all fair in that life. You know, I didn't mind. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be taken out of text. I'm not trying to say that I like killing people. That's serial killer shit. I said I didn't mind, you know, going that route. You know, that was just part of the life. It's not a big part of the life. You know, in a movie, it's, in 2 hours, you see what? 12 fucking bodies. You know, in a mob indictment, you'll see that in 25 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I just want to ask one other thing about this individual. According to the indictment, he was a drug dealer, this person. Did you know
him? That's right. I met him maybe once or twice.
Okay. So it was not over like things he was doing. This just happened. Okay.
It was part of taking his what he had and right. Not really giving a fuck about. You see, you gotta when you everybody does it in the mob. Everybody wants they want to get their feet wet. They're gonna pick a soft spot unless somebody in the mob says, "Hey, we're gonna go do this." Either it be 15 years old, 16 years old, in my case, 21. You're always going to look for that soft spot to get in. You're not going to go fuck, you know, you're not dumb. You're not going to go fucking shoot some mobster's kid.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's repercussions. Even my uncle couldn't get me out of
it. It's interesting to hear your story because like you talked about your cousin Tony, right? And he was involved with things and he kind of was just like you, except like 15, 20 years before. And it's interesting how the dominoes fall.
He was a lot smarter than I was. I'm not that smart. Like
you kind of went the same way as far as you were involved in stuff. You made your way through the life, and you then kind of advanced. And, you know, he may have taken a different kind of trajectory than you, but it's interesting that all these different generations.
Well, things were a lot easier when he was around. Making money was a lot easier, and getting away with things were a lot easier as well. I'll give you an example. You get a guy like fucking Vito Guzzo who goes to jail at 28, 29. I think 29. I think he was yet 30. Now, you get a guy like Sammy who had a lifespan up to 44 years old, right? You put Vito on the street for an extra 13, 14 years. Two touchdowns, right? 14 points. What do you get? You're going to get a lot of more bodies. It's just that. You know, the surveillance was a lot better. The cops were onto a lot of other shit too, and it was a different ball game. Imagine Vito was around in the 70s.
Oh yeah, he'd have been. I've actually gotten shit because I've said, what if Gene Barella was around in the 70s or 80s? I think.
Talked about that. He'd definitely be killing people. He reminds me of a lot of a kid I grew up with, Anthony Tabita.
Okay.
Gene reminds me a lot of him. Anthony had gotten five fucking bodies like drinking a glass of water. You know, he ended up flipping. But they had the same kind of I don't give a fuck mentality. Just snap and then go, hey, what the fuck you doing? You know, you had to talk to him. And they remind me a lot of each other.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard certain people related to him and just like making connections that it seems to be kind of connected to some pretty crazy people because he was a bit of a lunatic. Let me ask you, Joey Messina, obviously he's a very big name in that family. He took the family through a lot of tough times. I've said before, and maybe you'll agree, when it comes to Cosa Nostra, before Joey Messina cooperated, we can make the case he's probably one of the truly most underrated bosses ever. He did a lot of good things for that family as far as taking them through a lot of different struggles. Restelli was in jail. He kind of took them through the Donnie Brasco stuff and the three combos and all this different thing. First question I have about, you were a little young for the Donnie Brasco stuff. Do you remember that situation? What was that like in those
things? No, I don't. I don't remember that. And you know, growing up around the Sicilian guys, I didn't talk about anything. I was young. I was fucking, what was I, 14?
So you're still pretty young. Yeah, I guess that's the early 80s, mid-80s.
Yeah. I've heard of the story. You know, year by year, pieces have come out, you know. Like Nicky Santoro. I must have seen that guy twice. He's in pictures and going to fire him. He said he only seen him twice, you know. I'm like, yeah, sure. Who cares? You know, it's funny.
When did you
I got the best Mickey Santoro story ever. You want to hear a good one?
Yeah, tell me about him.
So they're filming the Donnie Brasco film, and Nicky's out of jail. So we used to hang out in this bar, and we took a liking to each other. He was a funny guy. So it was on Metropolitan between Greenpoint and Ridgewood, this bar. And Anthony Ribito would be there, and there was another guy, Sally Bush, another guy who was made in the Bonanno family. It was his bar. And we're going in there, and he's just hitting the bar. I go, "What's wrong, Nick?" He goes, "These motherfuckers, did you see that movie?" I said, "Which one?" He goes, "The Donnie Brasco." I said, "No, what happened?" "These motherfuckers got me as a rat. You see at the end, they go, kill Nicky, that piece of shit."
Yes. Yes.
And they kill him, and he's pissed. He wants to shoot.
Bruno Kirby plays him.
Plays his part, correct. Yeah. Bruno Kirby does. So I go to him, "Why are you pissed off?" And I didn't say, "Why are you pissed off?" Obviously, I knew why he was pissed off. And he goes like this, "This motherfucker." I said, "Why would he do something like that?" He goes, "Because when they were on fucking," he tried to get money off of them. So they were in Greenpoint filming. So he's telling them, "You're going to have to fucking pay me from now on from doing this shit." And they were like, "Okay, all right, we will." And then at the end, fucking, they had him looking like a rat.
Well, you know, it's funny you brought
that up. He was no rat.
No, of course not. It's funny you brought that story up because John Sirisani, do you know him? Booby Sirisani?
Booby, no, I didn't know him.
He actually sued Donnie Brasco for their.
He did. He got money. I don't know if he got money over it, but he did. He ended up,
they threw the lawsuit out because of his behavior on the streets. And the judge basically said, "You're a gangster. We're not, you know."
Right. And Nicky was trying to sue Casino, even though he had nothing to do with the fucking
really?
Thing. But yeah. He was just.
Because of the name?
He was a brokester for a reason. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he tried to sue them also. He was always talking about that. I'm telling you, he was a funny guy. If you didn't, you could have went to the bar you hung out with, and they wouldn't have made you for cops. They just didn't give a fuck who was around. And you could have hung out and listened to him while he was at the bar. You know, one arm at the bar and the other. He used to drink Glenlivet's. And he was quite a character, man. He was great.
Is he aware, though, that it was Santoro, not Santora?
I don't know. He probably babbled over drinks or something. But, That's funny. Shit, he was funny.
When do you first meet Joey Messina? Tell me about that.
Okay, so I didn't have much interaction with him on the outside. I've met him a couple of times, but I didn't think he even fucking knew who the fuck I was because everybody meets him. So I met him with my uncle, and I was with actually a guy that's made right now. We were going, and you know, he goes, "This is my nephew and his friends." And I met him, and he was with Tony Green that day because my uncle used to hang out in this coffee shop. And then I met him again at Casablanca, twice actually. Once with Louis Restivo, who was his manager at the place, also a captain in the family, who was my uncle's captain at one time. And another time with Vito Grimaldi.
What's he like?
Not introduced, but he said hello because I had known him.
Is he a jovial guy? That's what I've heard.
Who?
Joey Michelle.
Joe? Yeah. Once I was in jail, he came up to me right away. We were in the same indictment. So he came up to me, goes, "Oh, you're Cheech's my uncle. You're Cheech's nephew." And then from there, we just, every time we see him, we talk for hours, whatever.
I'm going to rib
How
you.
Is he?
Real quick, didn't you screw up his, didn't you make him lose his home, I heard?
Yeah. Okay. So he gets a $13 million forfeiture. And through the witch sect, units, there's six of them. Now, Bonanno guys can't be with each other if they've had any kind of interaction with each other. They can, but it's like if they try to avoid that. It's got to be if they didn't know each other at all, and you know, you'll run into somebody now and then, but not if you're in the same cases or in the same indictment. So he goes around, he told this Colombian guy in New York City, one of these cartel guys that he was in a WITSEC unit with, that I was responsible, and he told Frank Salemi that too, that I was responsible for a $13 million forfeiture because of my testimony on all fucking of his gambling shit. I said, "Motherfucker," I said, "I wasn't the one who was responsible for you losing your fucking money. All your buddies, the ones you used to fucking hang out in Casablanca with, who testified right after you told me was responsible for that." I mean, what the fuck, you know?
And this centered around a game that someone ran, we'll just say it, Bobby Glass.
It was a Baccarat game that was a seasonal Baccarat game that was run for 30 years that was held at – he decided to hold it in his that's how greedy he was in the building he owned.
To do that.
Because we – huh?
What a wild move to put it in his home. That's kind of
– well – he had a guy, Sandro Alos, captain in the Bonanno family, who had a coffee shop underneath. He was doing really bad. So he figured by bringing customers to the place, this guy could pay him rent. And if this guy pays him rent, his house could still stay in function. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It paid for itself. It was like just money. Everything's money. So he did that, and the game went there. We got busted. And when we got busted at that game, there was Bobby Glass's dad, me. There was a Fed guy who I end up becoming cool with. I tell everybody, a lot of mob guys feel that they become friends with G-Men. It doesn't work that way. It's a professional relationship. You know, they're like, oh, we're like buddies. I go, no, you're not. So this guy, you know, they're writing all these fucking posters with our names on it. Now, my name is a 10-letter name. It's not easy to spell. I know friends that know me for 30 fucking years that know how to spell it. So it's like a mugshot, but with your name on it, and the feds all have it. And this motherfucker, I mean, I shouldn't be calling him because he's a cool guy. I'm not going to give a shout out to him, but he spells my name like it was his name. And he looked like he was somewhere from Idaho. You know what I'm saying? I was like, fucking that. And I looked at him, I go, that was pretty fucking. He had me under the radar. He was the guy who was tailing me.
So he had been tailing you. How long was he tailing you? Do you know?
Close to he arrested my buddy, and he had and I remembered his last name. He shares this last name with a famous Newsday journalist.
Okay,
and that's all I'm gonna say. And he arrested my buddy on a murder that a conspiracy to murder, which I mean he didn't call the shot. He arrested him, and I remember reading my friend's papers that he wore a microphone. So my friend was saying, you know, he was talking back to him, and my friend was saying stuff like, you know, getting pissed at him. And I read the transcript, and when he arrested me, I knew already he was wearing the same fucking thing, you know. So he was asking me, you know, typical shit, who your cousins are, who's this, who's that, because they were going that way. They wanted to go to Operation Joe Mastino at that point. And anyway, he knew my fucking name. He was telling me for about 2-3 years.
When they arrest you, okay, your first thought is you were going to go to jail? You were okay with that? What do you think running away when that happened?
Well, I always had the murder in the back of my head, and it was 9 years. You know, I got interrogated for that. I was leaving the crime scene of that murder, and it was kind of weird. When they came in, I pretended I was walking in like a regular customer, and I just leave it at there was so much blood in the place that I didn't have no blood on me. So they kind of were like, was he here? Was he there? Did they call him to be the guy who to clean up the thing? They couldn't figure it out. So they interrogated me for about 18 hours. And
what was that?
It was like, huh?
What was that like?
Yeah. Typical New York Police Department, 1993 bullshit. You know, you go over there. I got my lawyer. Your lawyer don't work on Saturday. Too fucking bad. That type of shit. Go fuck yourself. Yeah. You know. So I'm there. I said, well, I didn't do this. Well, we think you know stuff. And then they were showing pictures, you know, these people now. Then they keep you there for another 2 hours and come back, just like the first 48. And then, the best is they bring a radio in. They go, oh, well, listen to this. It's going to be on 1010 Winds. You know, the murder. I said, just listen for it. And I'm like this. Then I hear the two windows, you know, people try to identify you. Oh, that's a scumbag. Fuck him. I hear from the other side. You know? I'm like, oh, look at this shit.
Try to give you food and shit and try to get you to talk?
Fuck no. They didn't feed me at all. They didn't feed me at all. But I wasn't giving them a hard time. I was making them – I was trying really hard. They knew me because they came looking for Vito one time. They go, you know this guy? And obviously, it was at Giannini's. I said, yeah. Because he'd been around. I said, no, he was there about 3 hours before. I was like, no, I haven't seen him in a while. It had nothing to do with him. It had to do with some guy that he thought they thought he might be hiding. It was the same homicide cop. So they recognized me from that. So they thought I was some kind of just flunky, you know what I mean? Like, hey, go clean up the scene. But, you know, I was actually the shooter in that case. So, so basically they're done. I walk out and I tell the guy, you know, I look at him. I said, I'm sorry I couldn't help you. And I hope you find your guy. He goes, well, here's a card. If you hear anything, let us know. I said, okay, I will. And I got right on the fucking plane and went to the West Coast.
So you ran. Interesting.
Yeah, fucking ran. Yeah, I ran. Until it died out, and then I came back.
Okay. How long were you on the lam for?
I think 7 months, 8 months.
Okay, pretty long.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get arrested, right, you know, at the end of all this.
Right, the same case by the feds. Yeah. The feds pick it up.
What are you facing? What are your charges there?
Murder in the act of racketeering. I had gambling charges. I had, I'm not sure. I think an arson charge. And they were trying to get an attempted murder charge as well. And a conspiracy to murder charge that they were trying to threaten me with if I didn't take the plea.
So this was going to be, you know, probably life if you're convicted.
Yeah. No, it's not going to be. I was a level 43 category 2, which is if you look at the federal guidelines, if you lose trial, is lights out.
So you're going to a USP. You're going away for life. That's that.
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, sure.
So you get arrested. You go into the room. They sit you down. Okay, Frank, this is it. Blah, 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 blah. What are you thinking of that point? Are you saying yourself?
Well, they do the same shit, the same 9-2. You know, they send at the time Joel Kane had gotten light. So the cops, it was the NYPD and the Fed Joint Task Force. I'm at the Fed building in downtown, and they go, "Hey, listen, you want to talk to us?" And because look what Joe went to trial. Look what happened to him.
And he's a friend.
I got nothing to talk about.
He's a friend of yours from Giannini, Joel Kane.
Yeah, Joel Kane, yeah. Yes. And I said, no. And I just, that's it. I was ready for trial.
They take you to MDC, right?
Yeah, the whole 9 yards, MDC, the 8th floor, orientation down, and then in general population with the rest of the guys.
Who was in there with you? Anybody we know?
At the time I got there, which mob guys? Alley Boy. Frank Campanella, Tony Masoto, Jackie DeRoss later on. Fuck, I'm trying to think. On my floor. Spiro was on the other floor. Okay. Now on the whole building, who was there that I would see regularly? I would see Barney, I would see Peter Gotti.
Really? What was
Sonny
that?
Sonny Chacone. Yeah.
Talk to him?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
How you doing?
Yeah, he sounds like Ronnie Dangerfield. I know. I make all these fucking comparisons to Hollywood figures, but it is. It's like it kind of is. He was all he would do is bitch when I would see him when he was going to trial. When he was going to trial, he was going to trial on that Steven Seagal case with Sonny Chacone and Primo, who ends up flipping. Mm-hmm. And I run into Primo at the witch sect unit. I'm like, oh. How I see you here, you know, it's like we went the same direction, and they ended up. Primo was on bail at the time, but when he gave himself in, he was in the WITSEC unit, and I would see him in downtown Brooklyn while they were going to trial, and Pete would complain about his brother all the fucking time that the reason they're in there is because they got big mouths. They're up there in McKean talking shit all the fucking time. Him and Coniglia. He would do that every time, like nothing was his fault. But yet, then you see him on the tapes. He plays a pretty good fucking gangster.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
and he was.
I got a funny story. So we used to go to Howard Beach and hang out with the girls sometimes. I had friends in Howard Beach when we were in high school. I went to Christ the Kid. And one day we're at the with the diner there. I think it was the Blue Fountain Diner. It's such a long time. So we're there like 15, 16, and some kids are ready to fight. And here comes Pete. He was sitting down. You know, he's got to show who's his brother, you know what I mean? Because he uses, like, this 50s terminology. He's like, hey, come on, you ready to rock and roll? This ain't the place that the Rock and Roll. We all looked at him, just like started to fucking laugh. Yeah, look at it. It's a big bopper.
I mean, can you see my screen right now?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you can't not look at him and like not chuckle, right?
He was a nice guy.
Yeah, he seemed like a jovial.
He really was a nice guy.
And
Allie's not a big fan of the guys, but he liked him.
Allie boy, you're saying?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're inside MDC. When do you get the thought in your head, hey, I want to talk to somebody? When does that come to you?
All right. So it's about five to 6 days before trial. And my lawyers took kind of a liking to me, but it was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't try. I never trust them. I still didn't. They were, they became pro bono. They were government lawyers. They had a good rapport with the government, and that shit always bothered me. And I tell everybody too, you know, you don't tell fucking lawyers the truth. You never do. They stop fighting for you. When the minute you tell them with that, I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're caught with the fucking hand in the cookie jar, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? But like in my case, that was, we didn't have no really smoking guns till the end. They pressured people. They were ready to talk. And that's why my plea bargain went up. And I knew that. I knew somebody was talking. But you just make them fight. And I didn't really feel comfortable with them. And they would come up to me. They came up to me in two different occasions, and they said that the government had spoken to them. And one time I chased them. I said, don't, I don't want to hear that shit. And the second time I was like, I entertained it. I said, what do I want to talk about? And I've said this on the LaVecchia show. That's why I was like, so they want me to testify against Joe, who I hardly knew, over gambling shit, and I go home eventually one day. You know, it wasn't a plea, but I know how it worked. You know, a 5K1 letter is entered to a judge after you cooperate, and you do about 5 to 6 years. And if the judge feels like, hey, he gave up a lot, you get time served. I understood that. I understood it because it was going on a lot. And I was like, so that's, I thought it was that simple. It wasn't. They wanted me again to other trials, you know. And basically that's what happened.
So I guess
I was lucky. You know, there's a lot of individuals that, you know, probably made mistakes in their life. I wasn't one of them. I would have kept on making mistakes. You know, that fucking kid walks into a 7-Eleven, buys a gun, whatever. And he don't get that fucking opportunity. I get that. You know, I understand that. I'm very aware of that. And I was lucky, you know. But then again, you know, I had a lot. Put it this way. If Joe Mussino don't talk, I'd be worried the rest of my life.
So you thought that the government was probably going to get you on that body. They thought you did, right?
I didn't. I after a while, 9 years. I mean, I'm like, what the fuck? So I was educating myself how it works. That double hearsay, no smoking guns. I knew who was involved, and I knew they were still on the streets. No, not really. So I was hoping when I got arrested, it was something fucking. I knew it was federal. Obviously, I seen the jacket.
Why cooperate then, Frank? You could have did a few years, right?
No, I didn't bring him the murder. I was charged with murder.
Well, no, so right, but they had to. There was their burden of proof to prove that you did the murder, right? You could
have
got off.
I didn't have the resources. I didn't have the lawyers. I had one lawyer that me and my accomplice was supposed to go half-half. Then my accomplice disappeared, nowhere to be found. I lost half my money on that. Then I got my, and I didn't have much money to begin with. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was that. Did I have a chance to win? I say that. And the one fat guy I tell you about, he gets pissed at me. He goes, dude, you didn't have a fucking chance. Believe me. I go, well, I thought I did. He goes, why is that important now? I said, well, I don't know, because if I would have had good lawyers, I probably wouldn't have got indicted. I don't know.
Do you think if the mob have treated you better, you wouldn't have did what you did?
There's a lot of things. I'm not gonna go that route. I'm not gonna blame anybody for the reason. I got treated fine, better than a lot of other people. Like I told Tom, I've done stupid shit. I was shooting people. I've stabbed people. I fucking done everything. And I've gotten passes just because of my family, who they were. So I'm not going to blame it on them. Got to blame it on myself and not wanting to do probably 27 years. That's what it comes down to. I'm not going to do that.
You said at court that basically you're totally at peace with your decision to defect. I no longer have to lie, cheat, or pretend anymore. So
right, because that's the life. You got to lie all the fucking time. You never commit. You know, they tell you to tell your friends the truth all the time because sometimes the truth can kill you. You know, you had to lie to anybody outside the realm. You know, they lie to their wives all the fucking time. They lie to their kids. You know, the cheating part comes with everything, robbing, stealing, whatever that comes with it. I was all part of that. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like somebody who found God. I haven't. You know what I mean? If religion makes you a better person, I'm all for it. But I'm not religious. You know, like some of these podcast guys out there, I get appalled by it. They should, if they are that religious, they should keep that shit to themselves. But I'm not that guy.
So.
Hey, look, I'm pretty sure he'll find me one time if there's a guy.
Right. He definitely will. So you admit what you did. You admit that you're this and that. You admit that you cooperated. You're not going to try to sugarcoat and get behind it. You are what you are. You're okay with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's that to sugarcoat?
Exactly.
If you played a game, you get caught cheating. You cheated, right?
Right. And you'll say that it really came down to the fact that you didn't want to do 20-ish years in prison. That's pretty simple, right?
No, because that wasn't – no. That was part of it after I put, you know, everything together. And the other thing was they were going to deport my ass too. I'd still be being in jail. Me and you talking right now, I'll still be in jail right now as we talk, as we speak. And then I get deported. Yeah. And over what? A couple of gambling fucking I can say I was for it.
But see, Frank, the thing is, and people that are listening to this show, and I'm going to say it too, and I'm going to ask you this. Why don't you just do the time for it then? If it's just a couple of gambling charges, that's nothing.
No. It wasn't my gambling charges. I testified on gambling charges on other guys, right. Not me. I had the murder on my back.
Right. And you also.
My plea was 27 years.
Right.
A plea.
Right. That's just a plea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was just a plea. I go to trial, I get life.
And you're saying in the gambling charges, that was to the higher ups, let's say Joey.
No, I'm talking about people I testified against. Is there anybody today that's doing life because of me? People can say, Baldo. No. Yeah, I didn't testify. I didn't give critical testimony to Baldo's doing life in prison.
Right.
Okay. I gave about me working in a coffee shop he owned with the machines.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm not rationalizing. I'm just saying that if it was, let's say, my friend, my best friend, my cousin, or somebody I really like, and I had to put him away for 15, 20 years, I wouldn't have did it.
You wouldn't have.
No. Fuck no.
You also told me.
Believe that.
No, I do. I believe it. Sure. Let me ask you, was there ever going to be a situation where you would have never cooperated? Like, if let's say.
Yeah. If my uncle was still alive, I probably wouldn't have. And the reason why is because as much as I didn't like him, he would have put my mother through fucking hell. He was just had that much of a strong grip on my mom. And he just would. That's his nature. He died before I got locked up, but I'm pretty convinced of that.
So you'd still be locked up today if you were still
alive.
You didn't want to put your mom through it. That's honorable.
Yeah, he would have put it through shit. It's just who he was.
Right. So, you know, how long did you do? So you ended up getting, you know, basically the 5K1 letter. You know, how long did you end up doing after your
6 years.
How was that? Where were you? How was that experience?
It was fun.
What?
It wasn't bad.
What do you do?
I did good jail time. Huh?
What do you do every day?
You get into a routine, wake up at 6, 7, I did a lot of running. At one point, I was running 10 miles a day.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of basketball. I like basketball. We're talking about that. Working out. Reading. Read a lot. I picked up a book in a library one time on 100 of the most influential books ever written. And I covered them. You know, there was everything from Richard Wright to Dickens to the Bible, the Quran. They never read the religious one. Too boring. And I read at least 40 of them in that time I was in there. I like to read case law, too. I used to go to just like a true crime novel. Not because I wanted to become a lawyer or anything like that. It was just interesting.
It was just interesting, too.
It was. And I would read a lot of the supplement and all those other law books. But yeah, that was it. I always found, you know, there's an old expression when it comes to jail, you know, do time, don't let time do you. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. Even it wasn't bad at all.
So you get
it kind of preserved my life somewhat, you know. I lost weight. I stopped smoking. Mm-hmm. I didn't drink for 6 fucking years. And you could drink in prison if you want.
Yeah, sure.
It was different, but it was cool.
Interesting. So you get out of jail. What year did you get out, by the way?
2008.
It's 2008. And I'm going to ask you this because I've heard about it. You reoffended after, right?
No, I didn't reoffend. I got into an incident that I will get into that eventually, and mm-hmm. it's not as bad as it seems. It was
I understand.
A situation with, and I'll just put it this way: it was a toxic relationship.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but it's kind of humorous thinking now back to it.
Were you in the program?
I was in the program for a while. I was doing really good in the program. It's just that it got old. I just didn't like the aspects of not going wherever I wanted to go. You have to stay where you're at. Mm-hmm. I didn't like, I felt like after I was done with parole, I was ready to get the fuck out of the program. You know,
when you're
I was becoming that poster boy, it seemed like.
Do you have like an agent that sees you every day? How does that work?
No. The guy would see you once a month or whatever. And I had a very good rapport with every marshal I was with. I seen him once. Everything okay? Yeah. You doing good? Yep. And that was it. And, I'll give you a good example. Henry L, for example, he was a fuck up. The guy is retired now, the guy who was my handler, he handled Henry Hill at one time, and he had told me that the guy, he'd pick him up from jail like once every 2 weeks for something stupid, DUI, getting fucked up, getting fights. Mm-hmm. And that was at a time where there wasn't many of us cooperate, rats, whatever the fuck. So, you know, they were giving him chance after chance after chance until he finally got kicked out.
So you're no longer in the program. You got out.
No, I got kicked out too, but it was a blessing.
Do you miss that life ever?
What, the mob?
Yeah.
No.
Do you miss New York?
I used to. I was all about New York. I love New York so much. I just like I said before. I mean, it was like I was total New Yorker. Everything about it, the sidewalks. I would go stir crazy. You put me like in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania. I would go like, get me the fuck out of here.
Right.
Cow shit and all that. No, I wanted to be in a smoky bar and fucking, you know, neighborhood local. Now you couldn't get me there if you pay me. I've been back. But I don't like it.
Now I'm going to ask you something. And if you don't want to answer, it's fair. It's
a personal
question. Do you talk to your family at all?
No. No, I don't talk to my brothers at all. There's one person I talk to, female member of my family. Huh?
Is that a reason? Is that because of?
Yeah. Totally different. And I'm fine with it too. You know, it's getting to the point. I really don't like to talk about it because I really have like ill feelings towards these people in my family. I just don't really like getting into it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's definitely about where my position is today.
Are you happy now?
I am. I'm totally happy. I got different friends. Like I told Tom on the other interview, I got friends that I probably wouldn't have had, not probably wouldn't have had. A lot of military friends. And it depends where I live. I live in two different places. And when I'm in one, I have geek friends on one side, and I have fucking crazy ass military, ex-military fucking on the other. So it gives me a medium. It's good, actually, when I get away from them, because I could go relax, you know?
Do any of your group of friends know who you are and what you did?
They all do. I don't like that. Remember the part about I don't like to lie and cheat no more? Yeah, and I don't use it as they, you know, I've lost friends because who I am. You know, they're like, whoa, what the fuck? But most of them are cool with it. I know them for a long time now, you know. I've been out since 08.
Yeah, it's been 12 years.
Yeah, so I'm part of the family. We always hang out. I got family. And we do family things together. We're cool. The West Coast side of my family is not too cool about it. Some of them are, you know. They're different, you know. They're not as wired as the ones.
Yeah, and remember, in the South. You know, out in, and I've talked to an individual recently that was in prison for a long time, and he talked about how when he went to jail, he didn't know anything about the mob. Like, he's from the West Coast. Like, he didn't know about New York. And kind of stuff. So, you know, wherever you go, in different parts of the country, they don't know that much about, you know.
No. No, they don't. In one part, I still live around where I was at one time in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And there was like this crime family that everybody thinks they're a crime family because on Wikipedia, they come out as a crime family. So I met these two individuals that used to like bring topless dances from like Canada all the way down to,
I think I know who you're talking about
here. To the United States. And I said, you were part of that family? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, man. You know, they're in the mob, you know. I'm like, you guys are two fucking assholes. Who the fuck gonna get scared of you? And they were like, you know, he's a rat telling their crime family guys that they're fucking idiots.
Right. Yeah, it's funny how some of these cities, like, they're really just a couple of guys that may have stripped.
I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do know who you're talking about, yeah.
Because you actually wrote about that stupid family.
I did a video about it. I actually talked about the fact that they're not a mafia. They're just...
No, they're vendors. They had a lot
guys.
Of pimp... Huh?
They're just Italian guys, and
I don't know if they're shit. They're Italian, fucking 1800s Italian. they like to play the part. So there's a lot, you know, if you're familiar with that area, it's a lot of UFC things going on there. Mm-hmm. So they like to go like to the UFC gyms,
yeah.
Get these two fucking white red looking motherfuckers and act like they're, you know, it's bullshit. It's all dog and pony.
That's funny. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one other question about, you know, and if you don't want to answer, that's fine. Do you date? Do you have any symphony? Do you tell them about this stuff or no?
Who?
Like you, like do you tell, like when you meet somebody new, let's say.
No. After a while we laugh about it. I have a couple of friends of mine that are ex-Navy SEAL guys. We fuck around. I said, tell me a couple of stories. I'll tell you. Well, we just fuck around. At one time, they were like, yeah, right. You're not supposed to tell anybody you're in the fucking program. I go, why? You're supposed to tell people you're ex-Navy SEALs assholes? Right.
Yeah.
You know, we do that.
Interesting.
You know, they're older. Older my age. They're my age because, you know, the Navy SEAL life is not that, doesn't expand that much.
Right.
A lot of Marines, a lot of Navy. A lot of Navy people, so I'm that's my friends. You know what I mean.
Final question: are you
happy? I got a lot of friends in college basketball.
No
that
shit.
I've met. Yeah, a good friend of mine was a coach, and we're good friends.
I'm a big college basketball guy. I don't
yeah,
know.
He got kicked out. We had a lot of fun together. Yeah, but he's a good guy. He works on TV now.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Final question on all this. You're happy with your decision that you made? You hold no punches about who you are.
Yeah, because I don't think I hurt too many fucking people. You know, that's one. I'm happy because I'm out of the fucking, you know, I'm out of that life. You know, I don't hate the life. I miss a lot of my old friends. I really fucking do. There's a couple of guys. I'll tell you one thing. There's like I went to. This is, you know, documented. There was one friend. I told him specifically. I said I will never testify against him and my asshole brothers because out of principle, you know. And they gave me immunity on my brother, but they said we'll promise you that ain't gonna happen. I said, well, I'm just telling you right now. I said I'm not. Anybody else, I don't give a fuck, whatever. That we, but I'm not going to testify against this one individual friend of mine. And the one guy that I was telling you about, the Fed, goes, well, doesn't he have a clause that, because he had been arrested already, doesn't he have a clause that he can't get arrested for anything else if he takes his whatever years? I said, don't matter. I said, you put him in front of me, I'll go back for fucking life. You know what I mean? Not that we have anything fucking huge, but that's where it is. And even, you know, whatever, my brothers. And that's where we were at that. They couldn't give immunity to. They won one because we didn't have nothing to do with each other. One of my brothers, we just hated each other all fucking life. So that was easy. But it stood at that.
Interesting. Final thing I'll say, you made a comment. As far as loyalty and respect, I never saw it. I can recall hundreds of conversations where guys would sit around a table and badmouth each other. I'm so glad that's behind me.
Well, yeah, you ever watch it? Analyze this.
Yeah.
When the guys, you know, the comedy, when they come in and they go, "Hey, that's whoever, Joe." How's it go? "Hey, Joe, how you doing? How are you?" "He's with so and so, scumbag."
Yeah, right.
That shit happens all the fucking time.
Interesting.
All the time. They'll spend hours talking about a motherfucker when he comes in. "Hey, come have a drink."
Speaking of that, expand on that. I want to ask you a question about people that you got to know over the years. Who was the nicest person you ever encountered in that life?
A good guy? There's a lot. There was a lot of nice guys. And if they weren't nice, they just didn't bother with me. Nice guys, fuck. When I mean bother me, they just didn't talk or whatever. Oh, fuck. One of the nicest guys. Probably Bobby Glasses was one of the nicest guys. Man, let me tell you, you'd have kids hang out in this place. You know, you always hear about them two murders that happened at the bar, whatever. Yeah. I didn't know nothing about that. But nobody ever talks about, you know, you hear in life, you do 99 things right, and that one thing you do wrong, everybody's going to remember you for.
Mm-hmm.
That's the case with him. He was just a genuine, nice fucking guy. There was kids that would hang out there. If they weren't having B's and A's, he'd tell them to go home. You know, he wanted to see their report card, you know. He guided them away from that life other than he was just a nice fucking guy. You know, how many times he drove me home after a couple of nights of drinking or whatever. He was a friend. I hope people don't think I put that guy away. I had nothing to do with him doing that life thing. You know, I did testify. And they even asked me in court, has he ever told you to do something? And I said, no, never. And he gave me one of them like, yeah, there you go. Because he didn't. You know, this was all about the gambling aspect.
Right.
He was a good guy.
So Bobby Glass is probably one of the nicer people. Who was
asshole?
A total vile person.
You know, a lot of people don't like Alley Boy Persico. I liked him.
You're talking about
I used to joke around with him.
You're talking about the son?
The son, yeah. He was really like, didn't want to talk to you. If he did, he wasn't, and he had a good point. Look, we're in a fucking pre-trial joint. Why should we be talking about anything in here? Let's not talk about it. It's high end goodbye. He had things on his mind. Of course, the government was always going after him. And people were like, who the fuck does he think he is? It wasn't that. It was just that we got along fine. But, a lot of people, even Jackie sometimes was like, he wasn't like this outside on the streets or whatever. I said, Jackie, that's between you guys. I don't want to know about it. You know what I mean?
So he was kind of, and a bit of an arrogant guy, maybe. Because he was the son of Carmine, probably.
No, it wasn't an arrogance. It was like just standoffish kind of deal.
Right.
You know, a lot of people felt Baldo was arrogant, too.
Yes, I've actually heard that. In fact, we interviewed a guy, Chad Marks, who did time with Baldo, and he said that. He said he was...
He wasn't like that before he went to jail. Interesting. And the pizza. When he came out, he became a little bit more of a, like a bitter person.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Right. When I was a kid, he was really nice. And he, well, you got to remember, he was like the third, fourth guy in that crew.
Right. Okay. A couple things before we go. I want to throw a couple pictures up. Tell me what you think of these people. First thought that entered your mind. We'll do this guy. What do you think of him? Any thoughts?
I don't. It's just like fucking... The next thing you know, it's going to be a soap opera next.
Fair enough.
I like him.
You do?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
You ever have any run-ins with him?
Physically out there? No. Close ones at one time, you know, where we were going after him, but no. Jackie, yeah. I call him Don Rickles. Funny as hell. Funny.
You told me a story that he was a bit of a...
He loves Jerry. He's a big Jerry Capisi fan.
Okay, really? So, he got delivered the gangland news? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he forgot where he was for a second. He thought he forgot that he was in jail. I mean, you know, and that's fine. It was fun. It was fun having him around. I mean, like, he has, like, I think 15 fucking grandkids or something. Mm-hmm. And he'll put his grandkid on the phone with me, listening to... repeating the Jerry, not the Jerry, the Joe Pesci Christmas album or something like that. And the kid's cursing. He's like six. Fucking grandpa and this and that. And he's having a ball, you know. He forgot where he was, and it was funny. I would fuck with him as well. He'd go for his pill line. So I'd go, come here, Ali, watch this. So I would yell, pill line, and he'd be sleeping. And he'll wake up looking for the pill line guy, and we'd be upstairs on the second tier watching, just going crazy. You know, he was a little bit older. But he loved the Jerry Capisi. Fucking Ali hated it. How the fuck can you read that shit? You know, you're kind of like telling him that this is gospel. And why are we reading that crap? He didn't like mob books as well.
So
big into military books.
Jackie's still alive, 84 years old. He's inside still. Do you think, you know, do you think he would watch YouTube if he could? Would he watch the mob channel?
Oh, fuck yeah, absolutely. He wouldn't miss one episode.
Do you think, let me ask you, because
you'd be like, this is how he talks. Look at this cocksucker. I knew him, that motherfucker. You know, that's how he talks.
Let me ask you, do you think current guys watch YouTube? Or any of the do you think they listen to any of this stuff?
Nah, I don't, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't? Okay.
I don't like it. I mean, no. I mean, and then there's that, and there's one guy that I would. He wants mob content and he wants people to be on his show, mob guys. But then he tapes a guy and gives it to the Post.
Right.
Don't fuck with that guy no more. You see, everybody who has any kind of mob contact, stay away, run. Have nothing to do with that guy.
Do you want me to disclose who that individual is, or do you just want to leave that?
I don't want. He knows who he is.
Okay, so you're telling me
he knows who he is. It was in the Post about a week ago.
Okay, I think we know who you're talking about there.
If I could talk to all the guys that have any mob contact that are friends of mine, there's a lot of them. Don't fuck with that guy. Boycott him.
Right. Fair enough.
You know, I mean, that's why I don't go on anybody's show.
Well, I thank you for coming on mine, nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, what the fuck? He tapes the guy and then fucking gives it to the... What kind of bullshit is that?
What about him?
Yeah, well, Vito, yeah. I think we covered him, no?
I mean, let me ask you this. The only thing I'll ask, do you think he lives up to the reputation that precedes him? Because you said, for instance, Bobby Glasses didn't. We think of him as this, you know, kind of raving guy that did this murder and stuff. And that wasn't really him. You know, he's portrayed Guzzo as this lunatic, right?
They kind of did not like each other. Bobby, so when they killed Ralphie, the kid that was 22 years old that we grew up with, he was around Bobby. I remember Bobby asking me, and this is the serious I ever got. I've seen Bobby. Did you hear anything about Ralph? I said no. Of course I know. I was like no. I'd be like no. Didn't hear nothing. Goes the people are saying about the Vito kid. I said no. I don't know. You know. So that was it. That died. And that was back then, because Bobby had taken a real good liking into Ralphie.
Right. Seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know this guy at all?
Yes.
TG.
Just like his daughter. You ever seen his daughter? Same thing.
Yeah, they look a lot alike.
Well, no, not only that, they act alike too.
Yeah, I can
there's see guys that are in jail that just act like they're at the bar. And there's guys that get depressed. There's guys that don't want to. And, you know, I could do time. Like, okay, Alley Boy hates TG. They hated each other. And they got into it. Something over tit for tat. And they put TG in our same unit. Alley comes and goes, oh, you're fucking here? Oh, we're going to start this shit again? And it was over that Paciello kid. They had a beef over him.
Chris.
Yeah. And they after that, they just didn't get along, that fucking guy. And then they finally, TG got himself out of that unit because his son-in-law was in the unit next door. So he wanted to be with his son-in-law.
Hector Pagan?
Huh? Yes. Yeah. Junior.
He became
also my co-defendant. Huh?
He became a rat, right?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy. You want to talk about a nice guy? So he ends up getting rid of him. Bally's looking out the door. He goes, good, they finally got fucking rid of him. I couldn't stand that motherfucker. You know, he just couldn't stand being around him. He was like, oh, fuck, what did I do to deserve this? You know, that kind of deal.
You're saying they're sitting there and he just walks in. He goes, you're fucking here?
Yeah, and he goes, come on, you're going to start this shit again. He goes, well, we're going to go tit for tat. You know, TG didn't back down. But he told him, we're going to go tit for tat. And he's like holding his head, like, you know, and Allie's in good shape compared to TG. TG just had heart apparatus, had cancer, you know. He's like, I said, oh, this is going to be interesting.
TG.
You know, and then the politics start. You know, we're going to the yard. You know, you're with us, right? I'm like, TG, nothing happened. Calm the fuck down.
TG had plates of pasta, probably, I think.
Oh, yeah. The best that then Ali almost got into it with Joe Messina. And I was the middle guy in that one, and I told him, no, calm the fuck down. We'll talk about it. So I was getting a visit, and there was a two-hour visit at MDC. Now, there was a separation between both of them. They didn't put a separation on each other, Messina and Ali, but the government... You know how they fuck around. They don't want it to be seeing each other. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. I don't know if it was legal. I don't know what the fuck the reason was. But they weren't allowed to be. So, Alley Boy has a two-hour visit that day. And Joe has a legal visit. And he uses that legal visit almost all of fucking Alley's time. Alley was going to see his daughter. He gave him about 15 minutes left. Joe leaves. Alley comes down. I forgot who came to visit me at the time. It was so long time ago. And Ali goes, you tell that fat motherfucker that fucking next time he has a fucking visit, I'm gonna have a legal visit and stay here fucking 2 hours as well. That fat motherfucker. I go, I went like this to him. Okay, we'll talk about it upstairs. All right, we'll talk about because you don't want to get into that fucking mix right there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. Here's fuck. I'm in the mix between two fucking guys who run their family, and I'm an associate here. I'm going like this. I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm gonna catch the fucking
right. Because you're gonna take somebody's side, and then it might be the right side.
I'm not gonna take nobody's side. I'm just gonna fucking make this. I'm not gonna say anything to fucking Joe, and we're gonna go upstairs and talk about this. We go upstairs. You know, he's my roommate. He's fucking livid. I mean, livid. That rat, he's there. Next time he comes to see that fucking wife of his, that rat sister, that mother, talking about Sal, Vitaly, that rat sister, I'm going to sit there. I go, calm the fuck down. I go, it's not worth it. You know, I don't know. Just you know, Frankie, I'm fucking mad, he goes. I go, I get it. Just, it's neither here nor there. Let's just stop, okay? I get it. I understand. And I kind of, that's what made him calm down. I tell him that I understand, you know, because if I would have told him, God forbid, he was wrong, he would have went on all night. You know? And that was that. The politics of jail. A lot of politics in jail.
Sure.
A lot.
I've heard.
Yeah, a lot.
A fascinating life, Frank, nonetheless.
I don't know about fascinating. It is what it is.
It's a lot different now, though, for the better.
Huh? You.
It's a lot better than the previous life, the one now you're in.
Oh, yeah. I don't think about things like that. I mean, thinking about it now, I didn't even have a life in the mob after that because I would have got sent to Italy, all right?
Yeah.
What the fuck do I do there? Who the fuck knows me there? I mean, yeah, you know, even if I wanted to make a career out of it and still had that little light at the end of the tunnel, I'd have been.
That'd have been that. Know? Right. Frank, a fascinating story, really.
Uh-huh.
You cut out for a second. I didn't catch the last end of it. What'd you say?
I cut out too.
You got me now?
Yeah, no, well, I hear you a little bit.
Yeah, we're about to wrap it up. I just wanted to kind of tell the people, you're kind of cutting down the interviews, not going to do anymore. You've done one or two here or there. You're actually working on some cool things that we're going to see you on here soon. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, one's National Geographic that I've been doing, the Narco Wars. We're going to do an episode on season 3. And then I have another one on a Netflix series. And that's it. For a while, I'm not going to give any interviews and not like that. That's it. I'm done.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your story with me. Nonetheless, you're an interesting guy, and you're pretty contrite, as I said, which I find to be honorable. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Good to see you. No problem.
Yeah, thank man.
You. You too. Yep. So there you go, guys. Frank Fiorellino, just a really interesting guy, a guy that has a story, a guy that I wanted him to tell his story, and he also threw in plenty of really interesting stories as well from other people and things that he saw. It's important that we remember that when we talk about history, we're talking about mob history. It's important we include everybody in that, whether we agree with their decisions or not. I didn't live Frank's life. Okay, I wasn't facing the same decisions that he did. He decided to go one way with his decision, and that was his alone. I appreciate him coming on and sharing his story nonetheless. Thanks, as always, for listening. If you enjoy the show, you enjoy the podcast, you enjoy us on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, thanks for watching. Please make sure you hit the like button and subscribe as well. Thanks, as always. We'll see you next time here on The Sit Down.